And welcome back to another exciting episode of Packet Creature. Today I have a fabulous guest. The film's moves to you actually bring me back to my youth a lot, but we'll get into it. Gregory Pellerino, I know that's not right, but close enough. Welcome to the show.
You got it perfect. That was
spot on.
Oh my
God! Yay! Okay, interview's over, people. We don't have to.
Anyway. Thanks so much for having me on. Looking forward to talking with you and talking
about
the
film. Yeah, I was looking forward to the thing. It was nice to have a film that I could relate to a lot.
Good. Good. I'm glad you were able to relate to it and glad to hear it brought you back to the high school and the youth memories for sure.
I want to start. Are you a big fan of the 80s? Because that's where I was going with right at the top. Because that's what it felt like me growing up in the 80s.
Yeah, so I grew up in the 90s, but I'm a huge fan of the 90s films, and I love the John Hughes films. You know, so, you know, that's the nostalgia of Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I love all those, you know, going back to that era. St. Elmo's Fire, even, love that one, you know, and then into the 90s with American Pie and Can't Hardly Wait and Dazed and Confused and, you know, 10 Things I Hate About You. We just had so many of them. There were so many great ones. And they're some of my favorite films, for sure. Yeah.
That's just scary. I've seen all the John Hughes films in theaters. I remember going
Oh,
to see
cool.
them. With
That's great.
VHSs were like, you had to wait like 8 months if you wanted to see a movie.
Wow.
So
God,
it wasn't like nowadays. It's like 3 weeks later, you get it.
That was the case, right? You know, it was like 6 months in the theater, right? Or 4 to 6 months in the theater easily, right? And then VHS and then maybe TV after that, you know,
absolutely. About a year later, it'd show up on TV.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm
very
gonna
different
start
now.
There. When you were casting this, did you look for people that looked like they were in an 80s film?
No, you know, I guess what I was going for was a film that felt familiar to that period, 80s and 90s, with a very contemporary spin on it. So I was going for the heart and soul of what those movies had while bringing it into kind of the 21st century with the kind of technology and everything that we got going on. And everyone I cast, I guess I would say that they felt relatable to what those kind of characters and those kinds of films were like, while also bringing something fresh and new to it in terms of like today. So kind of, I would say a mix of, you know, nostalgia and present day is kind of what my thinking was.
I do want to ask about Sherry O'Terry, because I remember that Saturday Night Live period is like near and dear to me.
Yep.
How did you get her?
Yeah, so she had been in, her and John Farley, Gary Pastor, Betsy Beitler, and Peyton Hughes were all in films with two of the other producers on a couple of the other producers on the film. They had just worked with all of them. They suggested the producers kind of suggested all of them to me. And I said, sure, I would love to have, you know, all of them. So they sent the script over to them, all of them. Sherry read the script, loved it, and hopped on a plane and came and played Mrs. Pop. You know, we talked a couple times beforehand, and she, you know, she just had so many funny kind of nuances that she brought to the role. John Farley brought a ton of fresh ideas to the principal character. And, you know, he felt like a very, you know, kind of goofy, but also really charming principal was what I was going for. You know, Gary Pastor plays the coach, you know, same thing, very, very fun and lovable football coach, all the kids. And kind of the Mrs. Pop and Coach Pop dynamic is sort of the house that all the friends go to was kind of what we were going for. And then Betsy, what she did with Darcy, just really, really cool and creative. I think all of them, every one of them just kind of elevated what was on the page and brought some new dimensions to the role that weren't necessarily on the page or in the script.
I would want to say, I felt I was watching an old episode of Saved by the Bell I'd never seen.
There we go.
Like the college years with the principal. I'm like, he reminds me, not saying he's Mr. Belding, but he is doing a great Mr. Belding, as I was saying, but making it his own at the same time.
Right. That's a good, yeah. I haven't heard that comparison yet, but that's a good one for sure.
See, I'm old. Yeah. I remember Saved by the Bell. So these new reviewers don't remember old shows. So I do want to start. How did you find so many locations?
Yeah.
Like, you are busy here. I like it. I like
Thank
your
you.
film that moves. You're constantly keeping me moving.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. I felt as though kind of the inertia of the film was really important to if we were going to be racing against the clock, and we are kind of following two teams the whole movie through, we had to keep moving, right? That was kind of the intention. To be honest with you, the script had originally been set to be shot down in Myrtle Beach, but we shot right after COVID. So basically, we put everything in motion to be ready to start filming once everything opened up with the restrictions and everything after COVID. So we plotted it out, and I kind of said, I don't know what the other states are going to be sort of mandating in terms of regulations. So I was like, I live in Connecticut where we shot the film, and I said, I know everything that's going on day to day in Connecticut because I live here. So I rewrote the script to be shot here, and the way in which I found the majority of the locations were places that I know. I played on that baseball field that Joyce sneaks onto. I played on that tons of times. The locations, in certain people's houses aren't anybody I know. We did have to rent pretty much all the houses because that was, not something that people were going to just open up their homes for us to shoot in for 16 hours or multiple days at a time or whatever. But, the boardwalk is a place I've been many times, where the scene with Lincoln and Mandy on the boardwalk, that beach I've been to tons of times. So a lot of them are places that I've been to a lot. That the most difficult one was the private jet. That took about a year and a half to book.
There we go. We're getting to one of my questions.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. You want to save it? I'll keep
No,
going about the other
go. I
places.
want to hear
Okay,
more about the
okay.
private jet.
Yeah, so we had a great company who was allowing us to film inside the hangar, and it was just a matter of being able to lock down a specific jet that was going to definitely be there on a specific day, because when people have a jet, they just go and they take it out whenever they want. So that was not nearby. It was about an hour and a half from where we shot the bulk of the film. So by the time we got up there, it could have been taken, right? So we were able to finally lock down a day where we knew that jet was going to be there at least for a window of time. And it took about an hour and a half. It took an hour and a half ish to get up there. So we went the night before. But that was about a year and a half after we started preparing for it. There were multiple kind of false starts with it, where we had one, then it got taken by the owners, took it out. And or we didn't have, a large enough window to get up there and get everything we needed to get done. So, it took a long time to book. That was definitely the most challenging to lock down. But, obviously it elevated the production value of the film a ton. So I'm thrilled we were able to do it. As far as all the other locations, yeah, some of them were just kind of places that I know, and some were places that we found along the way that were specific to what we needed. But it was important that it felt fresh, and it felt that we were continuously going different places. The carnival was a carnival that was set at a church about a half an hour from here. It was going to be done that weekend, and we kind of made that weekend the weekend we started production. So we shot on that day, and went before the carnival opened that night and filmed all the whole carnival stuff. And then there's a bunch of stuff that we shot that we doubled basically a club that I've sort of like a almost like a country club type of place that has a bunch of tents and does events and stuff that we made feel also like a carnival, where they're doing the beer chugging scene and a bunch of the other scenes that are carnival sort of feels. We basically doubled for a country club type of look, because those giant tents are permanently up in the campgrounds at the Italian Center of Stanford is the name of the place.
The school. I can't see that being an easy thing to get. You didn't touch on it.
Okay, so when you say the school, it's actually three schools,
Really?
and yes, three schools and 7 different days of filming. So
Oh, God.
the drone seeing the drone chase, the exterior of the school was my high school. And I wrote the script to feature what I knew about the hallways inside and how it in and outs of how we could fly the drone in and out and what the locations all around the school. However, my school was a Catholic school that closed down about 2 years before we filmed. So it was then bought by like a private, group. They wouldn't let us film inside the school. So right off the bat, we knew we would have to have a second school. Thankfully, we had a school that we had already shot the opening sequence with the water balloons, and the poppers going off and Patty coming down the hallway. So that was going to become the inside of the school. Now, when I showed up to shoot the exterior of the school, that was John Farley's first day, and I had about a 16-hour day scheduled. And then I found out we had only 4 hours that we could be there. So I reworked everything we were going to film, and I only shot John's parts that he does outside the school. We were going to do everything else that happens outside the school right then and there. So then we wrapped up with everything John did, and then we went to another parking lot and shot the shady ladies in the Jeep reacting to flying the drone around inside the school. So that was the first day. Then we had to shoot the drone flying around the school as the point of view from both the drone flying the banner as well as the camera following the drone flying. Now, that school, we already knew that it was going to be the one that we shot the opening sequence in, so we had that. But then we had a scheduling issue, so we needed a third school. So then we went to a third one where we shot some more of the drone flying around the school, as well as when Debbie, the security guard, is chasing after it. So we shot all that because we had to do that totally separate from everything else. And then we went back to the school where we shot the opening sequence and did the whole gym part where they hit the
Okay.
banner and knock it down. So that's the third school. Now, the banner falling from the sky and the drone crashing, that was all done outside my house because that was going to be very, very challenging to get right. So we did that on a whole separate day. All in all, it was 3 days of filming and sorry, it was three schools, 7 days of filming in five different locations to
That's
get that whole
insane.
sequence. Yeah,
Who is your drone operator? I want to give them full credit. That was some excellent work.
oh, thanks. I'll tell him. So, for part of it was Corey Green, who was our director of photography, and the other time it was Imran Vasanwala, who's our editor, who's also
I was
operator, and
very impressed with that because that thing
editor.
was nice and steady the whole
Thank you.
time. And there's no
Thanks.
CGI. I'm looking, I'm like, no, that
No.
is. Well, somebody doing it. I go,
No.
I gotta
We did.
give them props.
We did all that. Yeah, that was all CGI. I mean, there was no CGI. The getting the banner to fall from the Raptors, we had to kind of marry that together through green screen and stuff. But as far as the drone flying around the school, that all 100% happened.
Well, shouldn't he make $13 an hour? Why does she have that job? I remember that. That made me laugh. One last location I want to talk about is the store, the convenience store.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No one's asked me about that. Sure. Yeah.
I love this store. Is this a real convenience store or is there?
Yeah. Right near my house. Yeah. We shot that right nearby my house, actually. Yeah.
I look like a. I looked like I'm nothing against you filming. There is no room for you to move in here.
Yeah. And I kind of played on that, and I got the idea that like we should make this feel like almost like a thriller action movie when they start robbing it. So that's why we drop the saturation on the colors and everything, and we're kind of just crawling in and out of the yeah we kind of crawling in and out of the hall, like the not the hallways but the aisles, and we're kind of just very creeping around and following them. Yeah, there was not a lot of room to move, and I feel like that played well into what I was going for in terms of the kind of like the sort of almost Mission Impossible type of feel that that we were going for.
Yeah, I will apologize to people. I did watch this film 2 weeks ago when we were supposed to
That's
record,
okay.
so you're gonna have to help me a bit. There's a dining room scene where everybody moves at the same motion. It's probably near the beginning of the film. How
At the
long it take?
Papadopoulos house?
Yes.
Papadopoulos house? Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. How long did it take you to film that? Because it was wonderful to watch.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. You like everybody's coming in and out. You mean it was
Yes.
yeah. That took about, I don't know, probably maybe 8 hours. It was one afternoon. Sherry, we shot all of her coverage first. And then she had to go for the she kind of left for the day, and then we shot everything else after that. But we were kind of moving, nonstop, and we wanted to get that kind of feeling like this is sort of like every Friday afternoon where they all gravitate to this house, and they all know where everything is in the refrigerator, and they're all super familiar with the parents, right? We wanted it to feel very familiar, right? So in order to do that, you have to keep moving, right? It has to keep cycling around the whole kitchen into the dining room. Everyone has to know where everything is. And yeah, I think in the way in which we had kind of the coach comes in, stumbling in, he's out of breath, and we have Lincoln come in, and we have then we have the first mention of Freddie, right? So yeah, a lot happens there. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to shoot, but it was very specific in terms of how we orchestrated every single maneuver and where every single prop was, where everyone had to move as they were going in and out of each other, right? Because everyone's kind of like around the table, and everyone's, so everyone had to kind of move, juxtapose in and out of each, not only the table, but where each character was. And certain people had to pick up certain, objects and then walk to the other side. So all of that, I try to do as much in one take straight through as I can, because I feel like that, again, gives that kind of kinetic energy. It feels very natural and free moving. So, in that scene in particular, I wanted it to feel like not chaotic, but just very nonstop. Right, to give sort of the in a sense, the foreshadowing of how the whole film was going to be, right, is in a nonstop manner, except for when we obviously slow it down for the emotional moments.
So, what was the beer really when they drink beer?
What was that?
What was the beer really when they drink beer?
Oh, non-alcoholic.
Oh, that's not exciting. So, it's real beer. I'll give you credit then.
Well, okay, to be fair, all of them are over the age of 21. Everyone who was in the film drinking alcohol, they were all actually over the age of 21 when we filmed. So yeah, they're
I
all
don't care. I'm
but
not touching.
but none of them but none of them actually drank consumed actual alcohol.
So I guess we should avoid the scavenger hunt. I haven't really touched on it, but you knew it was coming. Was there
Sure.
anything that you wrote that you couldn't film? I mean, obviously you knew what you could do, but I mean, it's right after COVID, you're telling me. So maybe there were a couple things you're like, oh, that's not going to work now. Because also
Yeah,
you're
you know,
changing locations.
yeah, there were two tasks on the hunt that we had in the script, and one that we changed. So when the girls show up at the house to try to film the couple, hooking up in their room, the initial script actually had a couple doing that. And they see the drone, and then they chase the girls down the street. I rewrote it because I didn't think it was necessary, and I thought it would be actually better if Robin shows up. And that was kind of how I got the idea for the baseball game, to set that kind of like in motion. The other one was, we had something called the fast food frenzy, which was going to be somebody had to go to like Taco Bell and get a number one, go to Burger King, get a number two, go to McDonald's and get a number three, straight throughout the night. We just cut it because it wasn't needed. The one that we had to, budgetary scheduling and just logistics, was the shady ladies in the script got into a street race. So they pull up to a red light, and a guy revs his engine right next to him, and they just fly down the road. They're cutting in and out of cars, and we were just like, safety purposes, budget, amount of time it's going to take to do it. We just said it's, maybe if there's a sequel, I would probably want to do that for sure.
Yeah, I apologize. My notes are a couple weeks old. Why a Batman in a Pee-wee movie?
So I chose the Riddle to be Tim Burton because he's my favorite director. And I chose, I guess, what I wanted to do as far as the reenactment goes. I figured it'd be funny if one was kind of silly and goofy. The Edward Scissorhands, I figured, would be pretty funny to do with the plastic knives on his hands. Thought that would be pretty funny. And then I thought it would be kind of cool, like action packed, if they reenacted Batman. So I figured, like, the kind of, dichotomy between the two, like the shady ladies throughout the whole movie are very well in sync, and they are such a well-oiled machine in terms of how they're it's not a good way to describe it. They're such a good unit as a group,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
And they don't ever get anything wrong in terms of riddle answers typically, aside from the yacht thing. But they're constantly doing like such high level sophisticated stuff. So I thought it would be make sense for them to have a full on fight sequence, right? Like thought out all the way straight through, like doing all the stuff. And then the other team, Commonwealth Court, kind of feels like a group of misfits. So I thought
True.
they would probably do this, and it would look really kind of funny and goofy, however they chose to do it. So I thought that, Edward Scissorhands in getting the paint on his face and just the outfit in general, I thought would lend itself to a lot of humor. And then just the idea of the knives being taped to his fingers and him trying to just felt like very kind of emblematic of what that team is like the whole way through the movie.
So the golf scene, I do want to discuss a bit of that. I like the premise at the beginning, but you looked like you were cutting up a lot of shots.
The hole in one?
Yes.
So in order to get the ball to roll into the hole, we had to shoot that multiple times.
I figured you were.
Then there was also, on that specific hole, the ball goes into one hole and then through a pipe and into another
Yes.
one, right? So we had to shoot it in 7 or 8 pieces
I
to be
thought
able to
so.
boom, 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 to be able to make it, to be able to make it go down, up the hill, then towards the hole, circle around, drop in, come out the pipe, and into it. Yeah. So
So.
we had to kind of piece that together with two different cameras simultaneously to be able to make it match too.
Did anybody attempt to hit the shot the way they're supposed to?
Oh yeah, she tried. Yeah, she was really hitting it. And I figure, I can get the over the shoulder shot, and I can get straight on her as the ball like goes towards like the camera's here, and she's facing this way. So the ball coming to the camera, and then cut to the other angle of it rolling, up the hill. I think a couple. I think we ended up hitting it. A couple of us ended up hitting, like doing the cue shot to make it propel it forward a couple different times, to give us a couple different options for like the direction that it would look and be able to cut and kind of, sort of stitch those angles together.
So I was wondering, so you didn't throw it, it was all hit, like just a regular
Oh
shot
no,
then?
that's all shot. And then, oh, in terms of rolling the ball,
Yes.
when it came, like when it was going down the pipe, or down the top hole
Yes.
into the hole, we had to kind of, direction, give it the direction to make it go into the, yeah, go into the shot. Yeah.
Music, you have lots of it.
Yes, we do.
So you want to discuss it or your
Yeah,
ideas
absolutely.
for it? Okay.
Sure.
Okay, I could
So,
ask you. Go
yeah,
ahead.
go for
Go.
it.
It's
Yeah,
your
go go
show.
ahead.
I'm gonna ask. I'm just asking. Discuss your music. I like
Okay.
it.
Okay. I didn't know if you had a specific question about any of it
No, I
or
do
what.
not. I could give you
Okay.
some, but I was gonna let you have it.
Got it. Sure. So, I felt as though, well, first of all, I'm a huge proponent for music, in film in general, but I felt like this movie, just screamed, we need like the lifeblood of the film to be constantly propelling it forward. And the score was done by a really great composer named John Baxter. He and I kind of went back and forth. I gave him like very specific, detailed, ideas of what I felt each scene like should encompass in terms of like what the composition should be. And I had like for the scene at the Crenshaw house when they're stealing the tie, I came up with this idea. I said a comedic Mission Impossible, and that's what he came up with. The Edward Scissorhands and the Batman sequence, which we talked about, that's some of my favorite music in the movie because it sounds like a Tim Burton film and Danny Elfman's score while still being pretty funny, right? So he made it similar to what the actual Edward Scissorhands and Batman Returns music sounds like, but put a whole nother spin on it, which I loved. And I felt as though that the more serious moments were going to be the places where we went a whole different route, right? So the building of the sort of ominous score that gradually increases up until the big van sequence where we reveal the big traumatic event about Freddy and everything. That's where I kind of viewed it as it's all build all of the more emotional moments are building towards that score. And then in that moment we went huge with it. And I just felt as though if we were gonna kind of go there with that part of the story, that we should go as evocative as we possibly could with the music, also with the sound effects of the gunshots and the screams and the footsteps. All of that was very specifically orchestrated to give that effect of the viewer, right? So, on top of that, we have a lot of funny score, and then we have probably my favorite, which is the really charming sort of nostalgic score that's playing during the beach and the graduation. I love that score. I really love that. I use it a lot for like social media when we're promoting. Then on top of that, I felt as though an original soundtrack had a million opportunities for it. So for about 2 weeks, my mom and I literally just listened to about 10,000 songs
Oh,
easily
wow.
and picked out some really great ones. And everywhere that there's a song, I felt it 100% needed it. I also felt as though the tone of the film sort of shifts a lot, and a really effective tool to, maintain those shifts in humor, action, emotion. Having different kinds of music that is specific to that kind of scene really heightens what you're trying to do. So I figured we would use a pretty good balance of the score and original music, and then the scene at the end, at the beach, the song that Lily plays, actually the script actually was supposed to be Forever Young, she was supposed to play.
Oh.
And that was in the script. I got a call that the original Forever Young was not written by Rod Stewart. Many people don't know this. It's actually written by Bob Dylan. So
Oh.
Dylan actually what he had always done for his whole career personally approved or declined any kind of suggestion for a song to be in a movie or a TV show. And oftentimes it was smaller films like ours or not huge TV shows and things like that, just stuff that he thought was good for what the piece of music was. So I knew that, and I figured it was the perfect song to have in the movie because, it's exactly what encompasses the film. Anyway, so that week he sold his entire catalog.
Oh,
So
crap.
the price for the song, exploded, right? So I got the idea that morning that we were shooting the beach scene, and I wrote the chorus, "Build on days that strike the chord, only look back if it moves you forward." I wrote that in the morning. I sent it to Carolyn, who plays Lily. She memorized it. She created a little strum on the guitar, and that's what we did. Also film Forever Young just in case we could get the rights, or we decided to. But then when I saw how wonderful it came out, I just decided I didn't want to. I
Not
preferred having
needed.
the original song. Yeah, I'm glad that that actually happened, because I'm thrilled that that song is in the film instead of Forever Young. So yeah, that's there is a ton of music in the film, as you said.
We're starting to run out of time, but sorry, one last question.
Oh,
What
okay.
is 265 on the bench? Does it mean anything?
Yeah, I think that that's the number at a lot of NFL combines. I think they do 265, or college recruiting.
I had no
I
idea. I
believe
had
it's
to ask
265.
you.
I think it is something that a lot of like the combines use that number as how many reps you could, or it was just what he was able to max out at. But I do
Okay.
think I think and I know that there's a specific number that like the NFL combine has set for the bench press that all the guys have to put up. I'm
Yeah,
not
I'm
positive
just
if that's the
laughing
number
when I'm watching this guy go, I bench 265. I'm like, no, you
number.
don't. I can bench 265, so I know he cannot bench 265. It just made me laugh. Okay, I'm gonna have a couple of quick questions before I let you go. Your favorite film?
Of all time, Big Fish, Tim Burton.
Okay, your favorite 80s film?
Ooh. Wow. Oh boy. E.T.
What 80s film you recommend that people have never seen?
80s film that people have never seen. Is it One Cool Summer, John
Yes,
Cusack?
the great, absolute.
Yeah.
Saw that in theaters too, the
Yeah.
pleasure of old
Okay.
man.
Yeah. One
Love
Crazy
that.
Summer?
One Crazy Summer.
One
One
Crazy
Crazy
Summer. Yeah.
Summer. When he gets
Fantastic.
the
On the Cape.
bill at the end of the summer
Yeah.
for all the food,
Yeah.
it's by one of my favorite jokes.
Yeah.
And I think that's got the mailman, the guy with the newspaper joking it too.
Yeah.
You owe me $2. I think that's from that joke too.
Yep.
Before I let you go, tell me where they can find your wonderful film.
Yeah, so it's available if you're in the US. The US, the UK, US and UK, it's available on Amazon. The United States, Canada, and Australia, it's available on Tubi.
That's where I
And the whole
saw
rest
it.
of the world, you saw it on Tubi? Great.
I saw it on TV.
And then the whole rest of the world is available on Plex and YouTube. As well, we are actually, given the success of the digital run, we are actually now starting a theatrical release, which we're really
Excellent.
thrilled about. Thank you. So this Friday and Saturday, I'll be at the Embassy Theater just outside of Boston in Waltham, Mass. I'll be doing a Q&A after those two screenings, and then also the wonderful Alex Theater out in LA, who is exclusively screening pretty much only the Odyssey for a month and a half, is then showing our film.
That's awesome.
I'm incredibly proud of that. We have a bunch of other theaters lined up that we're in talks with, as well as we're going to do a bunch of screenings at college campuses across the country,
I think that's a perfect idea.
do a Q&A as well. We have a couple that we're set to be lining up for the fall. But yeah, please, thank you for all the support, everyone out there, and thank you for having me on to talk about it. I'm so grateful for shows like yours to give me a platform to promote the movie and bring it to a audience that I otherwise it might not have reached. So thank
It's
you
a
so much
fun
for having
film,
me on.
people. Please see it.
Thank
Thank you for
you.
your time and
Thank
have a
you.
great evening.
Thanks so much.